Imagine for a second. You walk out to your mailbox,
Yeah.
and inside there isn't, a bill or a flyer. There's a letter. But this is not just any letter.
Sounds intriguing.
This thing has been 50 years in the making, and it's signed by hundreds of people. Some you knew really well. You lived with them, you froze with them.
Right.
Others, maybe you just met them once, at a train station half a century ago. And some, you never even met them at all.
That sounds like the beginning of a mystery novel.
It really does, doesn't it? But despite all that time, all that distance, you all share this one single defining experience that, while it shaped your entire life, this letter is just full of secrets. Confessions about frozen bike chains, apologies for little white lies told to protect someone.
And miracles. The sources say it's full of stories of miracles that no one has talked about for 5 decades.
That's the part that just floors me. I mean, we live in an era of constant updates, right? The idea that hundreds of people could hold on to these collective memories completely unspoken for 50 years is, well, it's just so rare.
It is. And that's what we're looking at today. We have this incredible collection of documents, a collective letter to Sister Wade, and a compilation of articles called Memories and Miracles.
Exactly. So for this deep dive, we're going back about 50 years to what's known as the Wade era of the Finland-Helsinki mission. And we really need to set the scene because if you've never been to Finland in the winter, the setting is more than a backdrop. It's almost a character in the story.
Oh, absolutely. It's an antagonist. You're talking about a place where the sun just basically goes on vacation for the winter. It creates this this fascinating petri dish for a study in collective memory.
A study in resilience, too.
For sure. What we have here isn't just a religious history. It's a case study on how leadership, and specifically a very maternal, love-based kind of leadership, can impact a diverse group of young people for the rest of their lives.
So that's our mission today. We want to unpack these unspoken memories. The sources really emphasize that many of these stories have literally never been heard by the group as a whole.
They've been siloed.
Totally. So we're looking at this unbroken chain of faith between these missionaries and their mission mother, Sister Wade, who was really the glue holding it all together.
And I think it's crucial right up front to talk about who they were. Because when you think of missionaries from that era, you get this picture in your head.
Right, bunch of young American guys on bikes.
Exactly. And the sources go out of their way to correct that. This was not a homogeneous group, it was a true melting pot.
So you had young men, but also young women.
Young men, young women. You had Americans, sure, but you also had native Finns serving in their own country and missionaries from all sorts of other nations all thrown in together.
That must have created a really complex dynamic just in terms of communication. I mean, talking to each other, let alone the
Oh,
locals.
hugely complex. The language barrier alone. I mean, Finnish is notoriously difficult. It's not related to most European languages.
15 noun cases, I think I read.
Yeah, it's a labyrinth. So you have these American kids trying to learn it. But then you also have Finnish missionaries. And some of them spoke English, but not all of them.
Wait, so you could actually have a companionship, two people who are supposed to be together 24/7 who barely speak to each other.
Essentially, yes. It took a lot of patience, a lot of heart. And the source material says one of the language teachers told them that the church leader spent 4 to 6 weeks just handpicking missionaries for Finland and Japan
Wow.
because the language burden was that heavy.
That's a huge thing to put on a 19-year-old. No pressure, but we spent over a month choosing you because this is going to be incredibly difficult.
It is. And the letter acknowledges that. They don't pretend they were superheroes. They call themselves just kids, 19, 20, 21 years old. They admit to feeling clumsy and inadequate.
And when we say far from home, it's not just about the miles. The sources paint a picture of a really physically hostile place. It's not just cold, it's aggressively cold.
It's the cold combined with the darkness. The letter mentions bike chains freezing solid in a town called Tornio.
I had to stop and just think about that. A bike chain, freezing solid. The lubricant inside the links must have turned to cement.
It gives you a sense of the temperature, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the environment, it was the reception. There's a story of a missionary being thrown down a flight of stairs in Naantali
Oh.
and being called names on the doorstep, names they knew weren't nice, even if their Finnish wasn't good enough to translate the insult perfectly.
So you're freezing, it's dark, and people are at best slamming doors in your face.
Which is what makes this next part so important, the psychological pivot point. They call it the sunlight.
Right, the mail.
Yeah, the source material has this fantastic analogy. It says the missionaries needed mail, like plants need sunlight, And this is where Sister Wade really enters the story.
She was the sun.
She was. When you're in an environment that is literally dark 20 hours a day, and you're getting rejected constantly, that human need for validation just skyrockets. The letter says to her, "You were the kind of person who remembered that missionaries existed.
You remembered us. You cared." That quote really stuck with me. It sounds like they felt completely forgotten.
Or just invisible.
Yeah.
But when a letter from Sister Wade showed up, it was an anchor. It didn't matter how bad the day was, they felt seen.
But there are some things they didn't want her to see. As much as they loved her, the sources reveal they had this one big secret they all agreed to keep from her.
Yes. The Great Sauna Conspiracy. This is my favorite part of the whole thing.
It's hilarious. So for 50 years, they all kept quiet about what Finnish saunas are really like. They wrote home and told Sister Wade they were relaxing.
Which, you know, is not technically a lie. It's just a lie of omission.
Yeah.
He left out a few key details.
About the temperature.
Like the temperature. The sources cite 95 degrees Celsius.
Okay, so for those of us who think in Fahrenheit, what are we talking about? That's got to be hot.
That's about 200 degrees Fahrenheit.
200 degrees?
Yeah. Water boils at 212. The document literally says it's a heat that could sterilize surgical equipment or make scientists question human survival limits.
And they didn't tell her. Why not?
It was a protective instinct. They didn't want their mission mother to worry that her kids were literally slow cooking themselves every week.
But the best part is, President Wade had to have known, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. He'd been a missionary in Finland himself. He knew exactly how hot those saunas were. But he kept the secret. He probably understood what was really going on there.
Which connects to that Finnish concept they mentioned, sisu.
Sisu. Yeah, it's one of those words that's hard to translate. It's like grit or stubbornness, but deeper. It's this stoic determination to just not give up no matter what.
So the sauna wasn't just for getting clean?
No, it was a crucible. The source argues it built the toughness they needed. If you can sit in a 200-degree room, you can go back out and knock on doors when it's 20 below. It built a kind of physical and mental callus.
Building character while nearly melting. Okay, that makes sense. But the letter then makes this really beautiful shift. It goes from the physical memories of heat and cold to something much more spiritual.
Right. What the source is called the theology of good enough.
And this is a really profound moment. It's about the internal struggles, not just their own, but the struggles of the people they were teaching.
There's this story about a local woman, an investigator. She was convinced the church was true, but she was terrified to get baptized.
And it wasn't about the doctrine. It was because she thought her friends would laugh at her. And this is the big one.
Yeah.
She felt she wasn't good enough.
Which is just such a universal human fear, isn't it? That feeling of inadequacy. And these young missionaries with their, you know, broken Finnish, they gave her a phrase that ended up defining their whole mission.
Jesus tiki medet ritaven hiviksi.
Jesus makes us good enough.
And it sounds simple, but the source says this wasn't just for the investigator. It became a lifelong lesson for them.
That's the key. The document says the gospel was simple then, you know, before they got older and complicated it. But that core idea that it's not about being perfect, but about Christ making up the difference, that's what they took home. They taught it to their own kids and their grandkids.
It's like the harsh environment stripped everything down to the essentials.
Exactly. And that simplicity also changed how they defined success. Which brings us to the main idea of their letter, the unbroken chain.
I love this concept. It sort of pushes back against our typical metrics for success. You know, who closed the deal? Who gets the credit?
Right. Who gets the stats? But the letter reframes that completely. It says, "We succeeded together." It describes this long-term process. One companionship plants a seed. 6 months later, another one knocks on that same door, another one teaches, and maybe years later, a fourth one performs the baptism.
So who was successful?
Everyone.
Yeah.
The chain itself gets the credit.
They say no work was wasted. Even every ikidos, every no thank you was part of the design.
There's a very mature perspective. They were just pixels in a much larger image that they couldn't see at the time.
But now, 50 years later, they can. The resolution is sharper. And the sources list these incredible long-term miracles that are only visible now.
Yeah. Investigators they thought had rejected the message, who are now district leaders. Families baptized years and years later. They even mentioned a single prayer that affected an entire village.
And that one story about the investigator who read the entire Book of Mormon in 3 days.
Can you imagine that kind of hunger? It just shows that these kids, feeling clumsy, freezing cold, barely speaking the language, were part of something way bigger than themselves.
So let's jump forward to today. It's been 50 years. How does this mission still affect them?
It seems like it's just part of their DNA now. The letter says they still think in Finnish sometimes. They dream about knocking on doors in Pori or Turku.
And the food cravings, they're very specific. They still crave pula.
Ah, the Finnish cardamom bread.
And real saunas. I guess once you've had the 200-degree experience, the gym sauna just doesn't do it for you.
Probably feels lukewarm. But beyond the nostalgia, there's this sense of unspoken business. And that's what led to this whole book project, Memories and Miracles.
This is so important. We need to be clear about what this book is. This isn't one person's memoir. This podcast series and the book itself is pulling from articles written by both Finnish-speaking and English-speaking missionaries.
That's a crucial point. It's bridging that language gap we talked about earlier.
Uh-huh.
The source is very clear. Not one person has heard all of these stories until now.
Think about that. For 50 years, these miracles were isolated in individual memories. You knew your story, but you didn't know what happened in the next town over. This project is unifying their history for the very first time.
It's like finally putting all the puzzle pieces together. And they're planning something really special with this collection.
Right, there's a deadline. Or more like a premiere. So if you're listening and you served in Finland, this is where you really want to pay attention.
The book, Memories and Miracles, is going to be formally presented to Sister Wade on April 3rd, 2026.
And this isn't happening over Zoom. It's happening in person at the Finland Missionary Reunion.
And we need to be very clear about the invitation because the source material is very inclusive about this.
Yes. This is not just for the Wade era missionaries.
Correct. The invitation is for all Finland missionaries. If you served in Finland at any point, 50 years ago, 5 years ago, you and your family are invited.
It's like gathering the entire unbroken chain in one place.
And they even throw in a pretty good hook to get you there.
The food. They literally say, if you miss eating pula, that's P-U-L-L-A, pronounced pula.
Or drinking sima.
Then you need to be at this reunion.
You know, looking at this whole story, from the frozen bikes to the grace of being good enough, it strikes me that the darkness of the Finnish winter actually had a purpose.
How do you mean?
It created contrast. The physical darkness made the light they were sharing and the warmth of their leaders feel that much brighter. The letter ends with that idea. It says the sun may barely shine, but the gospel brought light.
And now they're gathering that light together one more time for Sister Wade.
It's a testament, really. The mission was 2 years, but the impact is lifelong. And for this group, that unbroken chain, it still holds.
So whether you've been through a Finnish winter or just a winter of your own, there's something to learn from the sisu of these missionaries. Sometimes you just have to keep knocking.
And trust that the seed you planted will grow, even if you're not there to see it. And maybe, just maybe, remember, you're good enough in the process.
Exactly. Thanks for diving deep with us today into the land of saunas, sisu, and miracles. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.